All right, so I'm told that we got to 15 lines from the end of Yud Gimel Lamed Aleph, but we're going to go back towards the top of Yud Gimel Lamed Aleph. We found the last bit of Gemara quite confusing, so we are going to attempt it again, looked up a few different things, and we're going to start from four lines down the top of Yud Gimel Lamed Aleph, from Gufa, which is again referring to the Gemara earlier had said, quoted, Umma'ala ma'al ba'ashem. So this is talking about, this verse is referring to someone who steals something and then denies having stolen it. Basically says, I don't have it. Takes an oath to that effect. Then discovered to have not told the truth. Then they have to bring what's called an usher. They're referred to colloquially as an asham gazela. Asham Gazela, right? A korban, basically, a sacrifice that they have to bring to atone for that, in addition, obviously, to giving it back, right? To giving the item back. And the premise of this is similar to what we said with Nezikin, which is just as Nezikin seems to require some sort of ownership, right? So this also requires some sort of ownership, i.e., if it's a holy object, if it's something that's hekdesh, then it might not. Then might not be subject to this penalty, right? All of this is a jump off from the fact that our Mishnah had said that nezikin, right, damages doesn't apply to nechasim she'ein bahem ma'ila. Sheyesh bahem ma'ila. It does apply. It only applies to nechasim she'ein bahem ma'ila, that are not subject to the ma'ila penalty. And from that we'd gone through this whole discussion about kodshim kan. So similar to that, we're coming back to this. As I said, slightly different but same. Same bottom line, which is linked to basically whether this is considered to be owned by you, right? Mamon ba'alim is the phrase that many use, or is it mamon gavohu, right? Is it sort of a more holy, it's owned by Hashem, right? Or owned by the Kohanim, or whatever it might be, right? Those are the various sort of types of things that we're going to go through. So now we're talking about, as I said, someone who steals ma'ala ma'al ba'ashem is a verse in things Vayikra, either Vayikra Tzav, it's early on. I have it here, chapter 5, so it's, early on in Sefer Vayikra. Umal Amal Ba'ashem, this is, as I said, you steal something, right, and then you, v'chichesh ba'miso, you deny that you've stolen it, then you have to bring this this korban. So what is that coming to include when we say Umal Amal Ba'ashem? L'rabos kodshim kalim. Right, v'chichesh ba'amiso. Right, I think is the point over here. The fact that you are doing it against another person, right? You are denying this to a person, makes it sound like this has an owner. That there is someone who can who's considered to be the owner of this. So therefore, it must be referring to kodshim kalim, shehei mamona, that belong to the person themselves. Divrei Rabbi Yosi according to Rabbi Yosi, which is Rabbi Yosi Aglili, which is what we said earlier. Ben Azai Omer. So now we're going to make it a bit more limited, and we're going to go through each of these. Okay, Ben Azai Omer says la rabbi says a shlomim, not all kodshim kalim, specifically shlomim, one of the types of kodshim kalim, and even within shlomim might be more limited than that, right? Shlomim might be specific types and not others. Abba Yossi ben Dostoi Omer, he limits it further. He says, Lo Omer ben Azai ela bechor bilvad. Ben Azai says, Shlomim, he's only referring to bechor. Now we're going to flip that on its head. So we're going to go through each of them on their own, and as I said, try and really sort of help to understand the categories a bit better. And as I said before, the thing we're trying to establish here is basically to what extent is it owned by the owners, and to what extent is it, you know, do we refer to them as owners, but they're not really owners because it's a holy object, and therefore it's considered to be owned by Hashem or by the Kohen or whatever it might be. Okay, so that's the... So that's at the beginning, right? We've sort of set out. We're talking about kodshim kalim or shlomim or bechor bilvat. That's it. Omar ma, seven lines down. Ben Azai Omer le rabbi says shlomim le miyute mai. When he says that this is including shlomim, must be excluding something, right? So shlomim yes, but not something else. What is it excluding? Ile ma le miyute bechor. If we say it's to here to exclude the bechor, then hashta umas shlomim she'tunim smicha. We're not happy with that. That doesn't work. Why? Because shlomim require smicha, unasochim, utnufas chazer v'shok. They have all these elements to them, right? So you have to do smichas a carbon. We mentioned last week or 2 weeks ago, right? When you lean on the animal, you have to lean on the animal before the shechting. It's sort of a prayer process, right? You're sort of, often it involves vidui, not with a shlomim, but often it involves vidui, you're confessing what you've done wrong, let's say in the case of achatos, which is slightly different. Unasochim, right, libations, again, tunufas chazev ashok, a certain waving, which again only applies to certain sacrifices. And shlomim requires all those things. So Omras Mom and Baalim, and yet still, right, even though it seems to be very, very holy, it has all these sort of, you know, unusual things that are associated with it, which make it seem more elevated in status, less connected to the owners themselves, and yet we still consider it to be Mamon Ba'alim. Bechor Mibay, so all the more so, a Bechor which doesn't require any of these things, you would automatically assume that would also be considered Mamon Ba'alim, it would also be considered owned by the owners, and therefore would not be, would fall into this same category. Is everyone with me?
Well, I have an even more basic
question. Go on.
If he's saying that Bar Azar and Azar said, when he said shlomim, it was to exclude Bechor.
Right.
But you said
Bechor is one of the shlomim. Okay, I thought you were going to say that.
Saying shlomim, exclude Bechor.
Yeah, so I think it's talking about... I think it means the rest of the category, i.e. Bechor is sort of the part that we are taking out. Shlomim is like, there are many types of shlomim, so in a sense...
If you just say shlomim, how do you know that you're excluding Bechor?
Why not? Because the assumption here is that Bechor would be fundamentally different, right? And that's the Gemara's response to that. The Gemara's response to that is...
That's the response, but... I don't understand how somebody could even say it in the first place.
I mean, why would Bechor be excluded from the category?
How would you say shlomim and be intending to be excluding Bechor if a Bechor is a shlomim?
No, I think you're focusing on the. The point here is that the suggestion is Bechor would be excluded from that. Meaning, leaving aside the lang, how would you denote it without? I'm a bit circular, but you're almost saying that he should denote it without saying it. We're suggesting here exactly that. We're suggesting that he's saying all shlomim except for Bechor. Right. So your question is why logically would he say that?
No. In other words, you're putting more into than what's said here. You're saying that when he said shlomim, he meant shlomim but not Bechor.
I'm not saying that. The Gemara is saying...
Does it say that explicitly here? It just says, he says shlomim.
And then it continues and clarifies. Shlomim lemiyutei mai.
No, but he said, the commentator on him says that. But not. It doesn't say Ben Azar said that.
I don't think this is the Gemara.
Ben Azar just says.
I'm not sure this is a commentator, like a later commentator, but it's a clarification. It's not coming along. It's a clarification of what his opinion is.
Okay.
Right. I think it's a clarification of what his opinion is.
Okay.
That's the way I understand it. And also, sorry. Let me take a step back. Maybe I misspoke. I'm not entirely sure. Bechor is it? Is a Bechor a shlomim?
No, is it included in?
I'm not entirely sure it is. I think it's kochim kalim, but I don't see why it would be. Kalim. Yeah, it's one of the kochim kalim for sure, but I'm not sure if it's a shlomim.
No, I think maybe it isn't, because isn't it mentioned separately?
Right. Sorry, yes. I don't know why. Now I've understood your confusion, I think, and I'm. I don't believe they're the same thing. So your point is, if you say shlomim and Bechor is included, then why are we excluding it? Now I understand what you're saying. Okay, apologies. I don't think it's included.
Yeah.
It's a different category.
Where's Bechor mentioned in the last one?
Bechor b'amaseh v'pesach. I don't remember.
Bechor b'amaseh v'pesach kadoshim kalim.
Yeah, they're definitely included in Kodashim Kamim. All of this.
Before that, it talks about Shlomim.
There you go. So sounds like it. So sounds like it is different. Yeah. Okay, fine. All right, good. Okay, so that answers the question.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, great. So when we say Shlomim, we're excluding Bechor. But then we say, but then the response of the Gemara is, if you're including Shlomim seem to have, i.e. You're referring to Shlomim as being owned by the owners, Mamon Ba'alim, they're the property of the owners, then we should assume, it's almost like a Kal V'Chomer, it's not quite a Kal V'Chomer, I don't like to use that phrase, because that phrase is quite a strong phrase in the Gemara, but we're basically saying, if you're going to include Shlomim, then you should automatically be including Bechor, because Shlomim has all these elements to it, smicha, nesachim, tenufas chazer v'shok, right, the waving and the leaning on the animal and all of that, which make it seem more elevated. And therefore, if you're going to include them, then Bechor should be included in it. Ela omer Rabbi Yochanan, lemiyutei ma'aser, right? Rabbi Yochanan says must be it's excluding ma'aser. Ma'aser specifically, this is ma'aser behema over here. Okay, ma'aser behema. So ma'aser behema, again, just to clarify, I think we mentioned it last time, but just worth saying again. Ma'aser behema means that every tenth animal you have to. So I might have actually said last week that you have to give it away. I think since then I've looked it up. I think ma'aser behema, according to almost everybody, is actually eaten by the owners, right? Is eaten by the owners in Yerushalayim, right? Which actually, I guess, makes it sound very much like it's yours, and yet still we're referring to this as not being your property, right? I.e., it's holy, right? You get the right to eat it in Yerushalayim, but it's not considered to be your property. Yes.
Also, Rabbi, last time there was some discussion that I heard about when it was that the maaser was taken, and in fact we learn in Rosh Hashanah that actually there's a new year,
yes,
tithing,
yeah,
and so it, all the animals born in that year,
yes,
are actually herded together,
yeah,
and actually that's the basis of the group from which you tithe your maaser,
right,
to your maaser, and there's maaser sheni as well, so yeah, that's how
that's
it works.
Well remembered, yeah,
so that's in Rosh Hashanah.
Okay, excellent. Thank you very much. Yeah, that's the first mission, I think, right, which talks about four different Rosh Hashanahs.
Four different
Rosh Hashanahs.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Okay, excellent. Thank you. Well remembered. Great stuff. So, that's Maaser Behema, and as we said, we're saying Lemiyuta Maaser Behema, this is excluding Maaser Behema, and actually he's got a proof text for this, right? Kidatanya, because although it's eaten by the owners, as I said before, it is actually there are significant limitations on what you can do with it, most specifically to do with selling it. Kidatanya, as we learned in the Braisa, Bibuchor, Ne'emar Bibuchor, it says, Lo Sif De, right? You cannot redeem it, but V'nimkar Tam Chai Ubalmum Shochot. An implication of this is that it can be sold. Now, this is not sold unless, I guess, and again, unless I'm mistaken, I think this is sold now by the Kohen, as referring to. But the point is, it still works to sell it, right? It belongs to the Kohen, but he can then sell it on. It doesn't have that same level of holiness, right, in quite the same sense. And therefore, the Kohen can sell it on, and it can be, again, it can be bought by somebody else, etc. But b'maaser, right, with regards to maaser behema, ne'emar, it says, lo yigo'el, right, it cannot be redeemed. It's a sort of a more passive, it basically sort of makes it sound like it can never be redeemed. Ve'enu nimkar lo chai v'lo shochot lo tam v'lo bal mum. In no way, shape, or form can this be sold on, and therefore, as I said, it seems much less, Momon Baalim seems much less to be the property of the owner, and therefore that's what we're excluding according to Rabbi Yochanan. If I remember correctly, I think David asked last week about the different language of Pidyon and Geula. So this is it's a quite a big topic, actually. I was looking at lots of different, but we use both of those phrases in different contexts. Most notably, on Seder night, we have the bracha that we say at the end of Magid. We call that, it ends, Al Geula Seinu V'Al Padus nafshenu, right? On our geula and on our pidyon as well. We seem to have both over there. So I saw in the name of Reb Chaim Brisk that geula is sort of a more technical transfer of ownership, which is not how we think of it. We think of geula as being this whole sort of fanciful thing, but in a sense, the geula is actually the more free, technically free. Whereas pedus nafshenu is a change in status, and in this case, what it would match up with is over here when we're talking about lo yigael. That's although we're simply talking about sale, right? We're simply talking about transfer of ownership. Whereas once we're talking about tifdeh with the bechor, we're talking about lo sifdeh, i.e., you cannot transfer its kedusha away, right? Its holiness away. You cannot turn it from being holy into non-holy. A change in status more than just as I said, transferring the actual ownership. So that's I think that's why how I've understood the difference in the language over here. Another interesting element. So there's quite a few interesting elements that came out of this actually while I was sort of reading around. Number one is what happens if you do sell it, right? Lots of times you have cases in the Torah where it says don't do something, right? But then what happens if you actually do? I get asked that a lot of the time, right? You know, people say, can I do something? And I say, well, you know, you shouldn't do it. So, well, yeah, but what happens if I actually do it? You know, can you leave shul in the middle of the repetition, right? So you shouldn't do it. Okay, so what happens if you actually do, right? Okay, so you're right. So it's not there's no penalty or anything. But sometimes in the Torah you do have a penalty, and actually more than that, sometimes the Torah will say something is forbidden, and it just the whole institution doesn't work. Nothing occurs. For instance, you see this in marriage a lot. There are different types of forbidden marriages in the Torah. Some of them, if you attempt to get married, if you stand there and you do a ceremony or whatever it is, right, and you do the right things, then you are married. And in some, you're not, right? So, for instance, one of forbidden marriages, obviously, with somebody else's wife. That's like a classic one, right? So that doesn't work. If you try to marry someone else's wife, it simply is not chal, and that's obviously more severe. And again, a child that results of that union is obviously very very significant. That's what we call a mamzer, right? That's very, very problematic, and it's not the only one. There are many types of marriages. Within family, again, that's another example where just the marriage does not exist in the Torah. There are other marriages which the Torah forbids, but the marriage actually does take place, and in that case, the child is not considered to be a mamzer. For instance, a kohen, right, marrying a divorcee, right, which again is forbidden by the Torah, and that's very clear, psukim. But if they do get married, then the marriage is considered to be a marriage. So the same thing over here. So interesting question you have over here. Let's say when the Torah says you cannot sell Ma'aseh Behemah, let's say you do sell your Ma'aseh Behemah, does that sale take place or not? Right? Unless I'm mistaken, I think the Rambam says no, it doesn't, but everybody else says it does. And on the face of it, you'd think that it would take place, right? In a sense, you have violated a Torah prohibition, yes, but in a sense, the sale is still considered to be a sale, and yet the Rambam takes that quite a step further. To say it literally doesn't happen, the sale is void, it never occurred, and therefore but that does fit I guess a little better in our Gemara, in the sense that it's we see very clearly from that it is not the property of the owner, right? It's literally totally removed from the being the property of the owner, to the extent that even when they try to sell it, it just doesn't occur at all. Yes.
The way that I was sort of understanding this whole section is that it's all about who owns the asset.
Right.
And if it's only if the asset's owned by another, is capable of being owned
right.
by another person, that it can sound in damages if you damage it or you take it away.
Right.
Because if it's owned by Hashem or it's owned or something or it's been dedicated to the temple, then the recompense for stealing it, damaging it, taking it away isn't dealt with here, because it's not as between. It's not a damages situation. There's some sort of celestial punishment that is incurred.
I guess so, although it's not always... Although, again, here we've moved away from damages. We're talking about another upshot of this,
we're talking about who owns it.
We are, and that is linked to damages, but we've sort of used the damages as a jump-off point. I mean, when we went to Gufa at the beginning... Yeah. Part of another linked halacha who owns this is, let's say you steal it and you take this oath, right? Does that, or do you incur the penalty of having done that? So that's what we're referring to here. That's including Kodshim Kalim. And again, so we're excluding Maaseh Behemah. So Maaseh Behemah, if I were to steal your Maaseh Behemah and I were to say, oh no, I don't, you know, this cow's not mine, and then we actually found the tag, you know, that this is your cow, this is your Maaseh Behemah cow, obviously the cow goes back, but you don't incur this Asham Gazela's penalty, right? Because it's excluded. But then there is another penalty. No, there is another.
Well, there must be. You presumably.
You have to pay back.
You have to pay back. Haven't you got to give a some kind of? It's some kind of transgression if you take.
The theft is the theft. There's two elements here.
Yeah.
If you steal something and then you swear falsely in a court,
yes,
that you don't have
it.
Correct. There's the extra one. So the theft, obviously, you've done, and the theft has to go back. That's not damages, and that's just returning what it is, or paying back. But here we're talking about specifically what we call the Asham Gazela, the korban, the sacrifice that you have to bring as a result of having sworn falsely. Not just any false oath, a specific false oath that you didn't steal this animal, right? So the point over here is that the ownership is linked to that, and as you say, it's also linked to damages. You're right, damages is the same thing. So you don't necessarily, Okay. Damage is the same thing. In which case, again, there would be no penalty in the case of damages, right? There would be no penalty because it's not considered to be mamon ba'alim.
Yeah, if you don't own that, I can't steal it from you.
Well, no, but the theft you do have to. I think you do have to give back.
Well,
theft is different
to
damages.
If you don't own it, I'm not stealing it from you. I may be taking it from somebody else, but I'm not stealing it from you. I may be taking it from the temple.
So what happens? But Maaseh Behemah, we said the owner's going to. We're talking more in the. I have 10 cows born this year. One of them I set aside as Maaseh Behemah. I'm ready to take it to the temple, and you steal it, right? So yes, technically the Maaseh Behemah, the Gemara says, is not Maaseh Ba'alim, but if you have the Behemah, you have to give it. I'm gonna take that back,
yeah,
right?
But the you can't see me for damages.
I don't think that's damages.
Well, no, it's not damages.
Because
it had been designated and it wasn't yours.
It is yours, I'm going to... Really?
No, because you designated it. Doesn't it say that?
It's talking about damages, but Gezel's different to damages. Damages is when I damage something. That's different to theft.
Our leaping off point for all of this is... Is the punishment for it going to sound in damages?
So damages would be if it was yours. If I have this, yeah, whoever has this ox, I have this ox, and your ox comes and kills
another ordinary person. But another there's a special category of property.
Right.
That because it's got some hektish on it.
Yes.
That actually. It's not yours. You've already designated.
Yeah, but you're extending that to theft, which I'm not sure the Gemara has said here.
Isn't that what this last bit that we said was?
This last bit is talking about the specific. You're saying you don't even need to give it back. I mean, I think that's maybe I'm wrong, but
no.
To me, that sounds taking the Gemara a step
point,
further.
Just a very narrow point that it's not. It doesn't sound in damages.
Damages and theft are not the same thing in halakha.
I think that's what I'm saying. I mean, I think it doesn't... Because it's not yours, yeah?
Yeah.
You've
stolen it. Let's just talk about a practical scenario. You've taken my cow, which was Maaseh Behemah, which I had designated as the 10th, and I was bringing it to Jerusalem to come and eat it myself, and you've now got it, and the Beis Din knows you've got it.
And my understanding of it is that... and I may have this wrong, but my understanding of it is that since you designated it, whatever else applies, I can't be liable in damages to you for it.
Not in damages, but you've now got it. So you're saying the Beis Din would say it's your, it's tough. You've got it now because you took it.
I may well have to hand it back.
But you don't. But I thought you were saying not.
No. When you say damages, you mean specifically a damage done to it.
after you've taken.
Are you specifically, or are you compensation? Can I come to you for can you come to me for compensation?
I want the cow.
For stealing my hectish cow.
Correct.
It's not hektish, sorry. Hektish, there's different types of hektish. This is specifically Ma'aseh Behemah. Right, your tithed cow.
I've tithed the cow.
Yeah.
It has been tithed.
Not you. I think we're switching to you and I. Yeah, you're switching to you and I. Yeah. I think you're the thief, isn't it? Yeah.
Then I've nicked it.
Right.
From you. Okay.
Okay.
The question is, have I stolen it from you at that juncture?
Yeah.
Or from Russia.
Correct. That's how I understand this stuff.
It's an interesting question, but I don't think the Gemara is talking about theft in this case. You've taken that step. Damages is when your ox gores my cow, or when you yourself damage my cow, right? When you're driving along and you hit my cow as you're going. That's damages. Then we're talking about this Asham Gazela, which is you've stolen it and now you've sworn falsely, which that the Gemara says you're not liable for. Yes, correct. That would be excluded from Ma'aseh Behemah. This specific halacha, right, which is found in Vayikra chapter 5. Verse 21, right, which is that you, if you steal something and then you deny it and you specifically swear an oath, then you're liable to bring a sacrifice. That the Gemara is saying specifically is excluding Ma'aser Behema, right? But you're saying the theft itself is excluded as well. So I think that's I think that's too much of an extension. I don't think we have that. I don't think we have that over here.
I'm just asking. I guess it's a question. If it's no longer yours, how can I steal it from
you? So I guess then you're right. So maybe you could say, but let's say you have the cow. Right? You have the cow.
I've definitely got the cow.
So if you've got the cow, then you surely have to give that back.
To whom?
To me, I was taking. I'm taking.
It's not your cow anymore.
It's, well, it is. It is. It's not my property in halacha, but I'm expected. I have that. I'm expected to eat that in Yerushalayim. Yeah, to take it to Yerushalayim
and to have it until then.
Right, and to have it and to have that as yeah. So I think that's I for sure would say you have to give back the cow if you have the cow. What I think is interesting, and I don't know the answer to, is let's say you've done something with the cow now, as you said before.
It.
Yeah, sold it. Eaten it, whatever it is, do you now have to pay me back for that?
Yeah.
That's an interesting question.
I don't think I do have to.
Right.
Because I don't think it was your cow.
Right, right. The question is whether that falls into Nezek, really, or not. And what is the...
It has to be able to eat his cow in Jerusalem.
Yeah. It's an interesting... Okay, I don't know the answer to that one, because what you're saying fits logically, but I feel that it's missing from the meaning of the Gemara. All right, I don't know. I'll have to try and look that one up. But that's an interesting question. It's an interesting question. But as I said, I just okay, fine. But just in terms of categories, I think we do need to say that our Gemara at the moment is specifically talking about damages, which is not theft. Per se, right? That's a slightly different category. Theft is slightly different to regular nezek. What we're talking about, nezek means you damage my cow, or your property damages my cow. Or we're talking about also this. We've added in this ma'ala ma'al ba'ashem, this specific sacrifice which you bring for swearing falsely on, for swearing that you didn't have the that you never stole this cow, even though you actually have it in your possession. Okay, so that's what the that's what the Gemara is talking about. And the other, oh, there was another thing I want to talk about as well, which I've forgotten. Oh, yeah, is to what extent we're talking about. So the other interesting thing over here is that the Gemara very, very clearly seems to draw a link between your ability to sell something, or, you know, whether you're allowed to sell something, and in a sense, your ownership of it, right? It's considered to be your property in halacha if you can sell it. And maaser, which you're not able to sell, is not considered to be your property in halacha. So there's a very interesting discussion as to whether that's whether that's categorical, right? Whether that's basically that's saying, you know, fundamentally, if you cannot sell something, that cannot be considered your property, or it's saying, you know, that's sort of almost incidental, right? It's what we would call a siman, right? It means it's indicative of the fact that it's not your property, but it's not that the fact that you cannot sell it makes it not your property. For instance. I haven't actually seen this inside, but I saw someone mention that the Nasibas talks about, let's say you have a piece of food. Let's come back to the category of damages, right? Let's say you have a piece of food that someone has partially eaten, and you damage that, right? Let's say my dog comes and eats the rest of your steak, right? So you're halfway through your steak. Now, you cannot sell a half-eaten steak because no one else wants it, right? No one else wants it. So now my dog has eaten it, right? That's the damages that have occurred. Shein, right? That's what we would call shein in the Mishnah, right? The what falls under the category of tooth damages. So am I liable to pay or not? So you could say it depends how much we take this as a sort of a hard line drawn between your inability to sell something and your ownership of it, right? The fact that I could never have sold this onto someone else, it was worth something to me, but in a sense I was totally unable to ever do it, and therefore it's not considered to be my property, and therefore the damages, you wouldn't have to pay damages in that case. Or you say no, in this case it's sort of like we say, it's indicative, it's a simon of the fact that that you don't own it, but actually, you know, other things which you can't sell, they're still considered to be yours, even though you technically cannot sell them. Yeah.
Well, I'd say there was some distinction to be made there, because it may be that you can't sell it because nobody wants to buy it. But it may be that you can't sell it because you don't own it in the first place. And I'd say
yes.
That's the difference. Now, so, but I think they're fundamentally different. Those are fundamentally different cases.
Correct. The question is, which is the Gemara saying here?
Yeah.
Is the Gemara saying here that's exactly what I think you've defined it very well. Is the Gemara saying here that your inability to sell it is indicative of the fact that how did you phrase it?
The first case is that you can't sell it because nobody wants to buy it.
Right.
The second case is you can't sell it because it isn't yours to sell.
Right, okay, so is the Gemara here saying that the fact that you can't sell it is indicative of the fact that it's not yours to sell and therefore you're not liable in damages? Or is it saying the fact that you can't sell means that you're not liable in damages?
I think it's the second one. I think
you think it's the first one?
I think it's the first one, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But I'm saying you can see how the Gemara could be read as saying anything you cannot sell is not considered to be yours. I also was struck by the fact that, again, this is sort of raised by an 18th century authority. I feel like in the 21st century there's a lot of stuff you'd struggle to sell. Which is still considered to be yours. I mean, the second-hand market nowadays is very, very little. There's not many things. Most of the time, unfortunately, we live in, you know, a very disposable society. Most of what I own, people would rather chuck it in a bin rather than buy it from me. I mean, most of my wardrobe, no one would take a worn shirt or a worn anything, you know, whatever it might be. Whereas once upon a time, it'd be very valuable. Yeah, okay, you've got a shirt with a hole in it. Okay, so I'll sew up the hole and I'll have your shirt. Thank you very much. That's very kind of you. You know, it's a lovely thing. Whereas nowadays, we'd never think about doing anything like that. So it's just
a digression, but I always goes through my mind that it's connected in a way.
Right.
On Pesach, when
yes.
you sell comments.
Yes.
I don't like, if I can avoid it, to sell something that's already been opened. Because who would want to buy an opened package?
Oh, interesting.
Say you've got shredded wheat and you've opened the box and you've eaten half of the box. Who would want to buy that?
Well, that only goes to the value then of how you value your comment.
No, but I think what David's saying is you shouldn't be selling it
if it's not yours.
Yeah, correct. If it's not sellable, yeah. Who is going to do it? But yeah. Yeah, I mean, you say what's already been opened depends what it is. I mean, like an open whiskey is different to an open open box of shredded wheat.
I'm saying,
yeah.
It's not a blanket.
But therefore you need to dispose of it in some way.
No, so he's saying he tries to get rid of it. Yeah. Yeah. That's an interesting one.
I tried to eat it.
Yeah,
I tried to eat it.
Yeah. That's the best beer of comments.
If you've got a half open packet of cornflakes, whatever could be comments.
Yeah.
Half open packet of porridge.
Oats. Yes. It's beer of comments.
Somebody going to want to buy that?
Yeah, beer of comments. That's the best beer. I think one of my rebbeim used to do that from the beginning of you're supposed to. I can't remember when it's from. I think it's from either from 30 days before or from Rosh Chodesh. But you know, whenever he would sit down and eat a sandwich or whatever it is, we call it mitzvah pure chometz. Yeah, you know, it's sort of he's fulfilling his obligation to destroy chometz by.
I do my best.
Yeah, exactly. By eating it. That's a good question. I like that one. I still think people would take it. People would take it. It depends what it is. I think something half eaten on a plate is different to a half open box of cereal. If you put it out, I don't know. Let's say you had guests and you put it out on the table. You know, everyone would happily eat from it. Whereas if you had guests and you put out your half eaten, whatever it is, yeah, I don't think your guests would be particularly.
I'm
thrilled.
Talking about products that theoretically could begin to perish once the packet is open. Like vacuum sealed packets or biscuits.
Yes, but my point is, no one would buy it, but it would have value. People would accept it as take it. Yeah, people would take it from you. People would happily accept that from you. You know, okay. If your neighbour ran out of cereal and they said, "Do you have any?" You know, and you drop it off, they would say, "Sure." Whereas if they, I don't know, they didn't have any food for dinner and you say, "Oh well, I have this," you know, I've gone through half my whatever it is, jacket potato. Yeah, they probably wouldn't necessarily want the other half, I think, which has been on your plate. But anyway, yeah. Okay, interesting stuff. Interesting stuff. So that's all linked to. We should at least try to get to as far as we got last time. So let's see if we can make a jump. Okay. So that's Rabbi Yochanan had concluded and said it's excluding Maser Behema. Lemiyotay Maser. Is that halfway down the Amud or have I skipped? No, I've skipped. Yeah, because it's twice. Okay, Kid Tanya. Yeah. Oh no, Kid Tanya. We did. Lo yigael ve inanim kar lo chay ve lo shochet lo tam ve lo balmum. Ravina masnin lo asefa. Okay, about a third of the way down. Yeah, Ravina masnin lo asefa. So he says that's. He basically swaps it around. He says it's not. It's not referring to Shlomim excluding Bechor, right? Ella bebechor Maslin Asefa. He basically uses this same thing to refer to the Abba Yossi ben Dostoy, Omer Lo Omer Ben Azai, Ella bebechor Bilvad. It wasn't all Shlomim. He's saying Ben Azai really meant Bechor alone. Lemiute Mai. What exactly? What is that excluding? Ilei mo lemiyotei shlomim, if you're saying that's to exclude shlomim, right? Hashto ma bechor shekodesh mirechem. So now, again, what's interesting, as I pointed to before, is the fact that we've now turned this on its head. The logic last time seemed to go in the direction of shlomim being more or less owned than bechor, and therefore if shlomim can be owned, then automatically bechor can be owned. Now we're saying the opposite, right? If bechor, which is kodesh merechem, which is considered to be holy from the from in utero, right, from the moment it's born, maybe let's say mamonohu, and yet it's still considered to be the property of the owners, then Shlomim Miboy, right? All the more so Shlomim should, right? Which is not Kodesh Merechem. That's not considered to be holy from the beginning. It only becomes holy later on. You make that holy at a later stage. So Amar Rabbi Yochanan, and therefore Rabbi Yochanan responds, no, it's to exclude Masa Behema. That's what we're referring to. Okay. Kidzatanya Bebechor, Nemar Lo Sifde, Venimkar Tam Chai Balmum Shochet. Again, the same thing. But Maser Nemar Lo Yugael, Venimkar Lo Chai Velo Shochet, Lo Tam Velo Balmum. Again, Maser cannot be sold, whereas Bechor can be sold, right? As we've, and we just went through all of our discussions on that. Ho Bebechor Bilvad. So, Ho Bebechor Bilvad Ka'omar Kasha. Right, so therefore, doesn't work to say that he's referring to only a to work. It doesn't work to say he's only referring to a bechor. Okay, we'll keep going. Oh, it's the 10th. We'll do a little bit more. We'll see how far we can go. What?
10 minutes,
yeah, we'll see what we can go. Okay, fine. Rava Omar. Rava says, so now this is coming back to our Mishnah, right? My nechosim she'in bahem me'ila, right? What does that mean? Nechosim she'in bahem din me'ila. Okay, we're referring to objects which don't have this specific specific halacha applying to them. Umayn hinhu, what does that mean? The hedyot, right? I.e., he's rereading our implicate right back at the beginning. We go back to Yud Beis Amud Beis, right? We had made this. We'd specifically gone out of our way to say that when the Mishnah says that it's things which are not liable to Me'ila, we'd read that very literally. It means only things which are not liable to the penalty of Me'ila, and therefore Kodshim Kalim, which is excluded from that, would be okay. Would be included in Nezek. Whereas Rava now is basically turning it on its head. Rava's saying it's referring to things which don't have a din of Me'ila, right? I.e. anything which is Hekdash, right? They don't have any, it's sort of being much more expansive. He's rereading the Mishnah to a much more expansive exclusion, and therefore basically just saying the Hedyot, right? And therefore all the things that we've just discussed, Kochim Kalim and Shlomim Bechor, right? All that, well, Shlomim Bechor is all part of Kochim Kalim, but basically that whole category is, he would say, is included in Nezek, even though it's not Momon Ba'alim, it sounds like, right? Even though it is Momon Ba'alim, even though it is considered to be property of the owner, it's still excluded from Nezek. It seems to be there's a much more expansive get out or exclusion from this Mishnah. Okay, that's opinion of Rabbah. Omer Rabbi Abba, Shlomim Shehiziku, Gove Mibesoron, Ve'ina Gove Me'emurehen. Right? Now we're talking about the Shlomim. Let's say you have this Korban Shlomim, right? So any type of sacrifice that you are bringing as a Shlomim, and they cause damage. Gove Mibesoron, Ve'ina Gove Me'emurehen. What is this referring to? So this is referring to a specific, I don't think we've really talked about this much, actually. We haven't really got to the whole Chatzi Nezek thing. I think that's going to come in the next daf or so. But this is talking about, let's say, a Shor Tam, right? Shor Tam has two exceptions. One we spent more time talking about, but the other one we haven't really talked about. Shor Tam, firstly, only pays half damages, but it also only pays what we call Migufo, which means that it only pays up to its own value, right? So you can only pay up to its own value. And therefore, if my ox gores your ox, and yours is particularly expensive, right? Particularly expensive. My ox is only worth £100, yours is worth £1,000. So although I'm only liable £500, I'm actually only liable to pay £100. I'm only liable to pay up to the value of my ox. So now let's say my ox was Shlomim, a Shlomim, right? It's a Shor Tam. So not only am I, I'm not even liable to pay £100, I'm only liable to pay Mibesoron, to give the actual basar, the flesh, but not me'emurehem, right? Emurim are basically other parts of the animal which are offered, which are burnt on the altar, right? They don't get eaten, they just get burnt on the altar. They're the sort of the other parts of the animal, and therefore the value is lowered slightly, right? Everyone understood? You don't look convinced.
Well, I'm puzzled over why value of your animal affects what you have to compensate.
We'll get to that in the next daf. I mean, it's based on Sukkim in the Torah. The Torah says that if you have a Shor Tam, right, it's one of the exceptions of Shor Tam. The fact that it's unexpected, that comes back to our whole thing about the this animal which is a tam, which has never gored before. It's done something very unusual, very surprising, and therefore there are two limitations on it. One is only half damages, and the other one is the fact that you only have to pay back up to its own value. But that's really next. As I said, we'll talk more about that when we get to that Gemara later on, when we talk about Migufa. But over here, what the Gemara is saying is that, okay, so let's take for granted now that you need to only pay Migufa. Even Migufa, even the value of the animal, is limited to only the Mibesoron, only to the value of what would be eaten, right? But Me'emurehen, Ve'enigov Me'emurehen. Gemara responds, Pshita, obviously, right? Emurehen, Ligavoha. Salki, right? Emorian is going up to heaven, right? Then obviously you're not going to get it. So lo tzricha legova mibesaron keneged emurin, right? So maybe you should be able to maybe you should be able to pay back from the basar, they should expect payment back from the basar in a sense in keneged, basically sort of to make up for the imurim. So let's read this explanation I have over here. It helps a little bit. I.e., the value of the flesh of the animal that would be eaten is not quite up to chatzi nezek. Right, you cannot claim more than you cannot basically sort of take from the flesh more than chatzi nezek keneged shovi ha'imurim she'eino gover mehem klal. Right, that basically that that the oh sorry this is shlomim shehiziku shehokdash lekarbon shlomim shehiziku v'din shota This is the and now I've got myself confused. Which has done the shehiziku? Yeah, no, they have caused the damage. Right, this is the shlomim that has caused the damage. Excuse me. Kolom she'ima basar levada in a shave chatzi mehanezek shehischayv bo any yochel ligvos mehabasar yoser mechatzi nezek. You cannot claim more from the flesh more than chatzi nezek, but how could you do that anyway? It's not worth enough. Keneged shovi ha'imurim she'ena go v'mehem kalal. I think what sounds like you're doing, it sounds like you're sort of selling it off basically for more than it's worth, or you're effectively sort of getting back more as a result of it. Right, you're effectively selling off this flesh, right? And as a result of that, you're going to get more, even if it adds up to include the emurim. So what the Gemara is coming to do is coming to exclude that, right? Coming to exclude that possibility. The Gemara says, even still, right? It's pshita, right? Why would you aliba deman? Right, e aliba de rabbanon. If we're talking about according to the rabbanon, the truth is this is getting into a whole different machlokas actually, which is later on. If we're talking, let's do it quickly, and then we'll start from this point again next time to go through it again. But it's worth covering it now, and then hopefully it'll help us to have it better when we do it again next time. E aliba de rabbanon. We have a machlokas later on between the rabbanon and I think it's Rabbi Noson. Right, let's describe this, and then we'll end there and come back to Rava on my late next week. So, or next time, let's say my animal pushes your animal into a pit, right? Into a pit of somebody else, right? So you have Reuven, Shimon, and Levi, as we always do. Okay, Reuven's animal pushes Shimon's animal into Levi's pit. Right, so usually you'd say if the animal falls into a pit, then the owner of the pit has to pay back. Right, but here if my animal causes damage to your animal, then the owner of the animal has to pay. So who in this case has to pay? So I think the Gemara says that the Baal Hashor has to pay. Right, the owner of the animal is the one that has to pay. Right, I put Reuven's animal pushed Shimon's animal into Levi's pit. Reuven is the one who has to pay back Shimon. But now Reuven's animal is a Shoratam, so he only pays back Chatzi Nezek. Right, he only pays back half the damages. So then we have a machlokas as to once he's only paying back half damages, does Levi have to fill in the other half damages? If his animal was a shomuad, he was paying the whole thing, then I understand. But let's say he's only paying part of it anyway, right? He's only paying part of the damages. Shimon says, I want the whole thing back, right? It's fallen to pit. So can I claim back the rest from Levi? So that's machlokas between the Rabbanan and Rabbi Noson, and that's what our Gemara is going to come back to refer to. But as I said, that's really getting into a whole nother topic, which I'm not sure we'll manage to do now. So let's come back and start again from there. We'll start from Don't have to go back from Rav Omer. From Omer Rabbi Abba. We'll start from Omer Rabbi Abba. I'm going to actually mark it off this time to remember. So we'll start from Omer Rabbi Abba next time. Okay? All right. Thank you.